Hello, I'm Gail Gibson, accredited master coach, speaker, author, and podcaster. Welcome to my podcast, The Can Do Way. My guests from across the globe have can-do stories of growth, resilience, and success to share. Tune in and be inspired by these individuals who have developed a strong can-do approach. Each one of their stories is unique. Each one of their stories has a key message. So in this episode, I'm talking to Lara Kui, founder, executive coach, business development consultant, and podcast host. With over 40 years life experience and a varied career as a solicitor, entrepreneur, teacher, business developer, and marketer, Lara coaches extraordinary people who inspire her. Her company, Lara Kui Associates, is a boutique executive coaching and business consultancy offering a range of services to professionals. The consultancy helps lawyers, leaders, and founders achieve their full potential through coaching, one-to-one training, mastermind groups, and curated networking opportunities. It's lovely to have you here today. Lara, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Gail. Very excited to be here.
Okay, so the first question I'd like to ask you is, can we take a short walk through your life? If you can give us a glimpse of your background and how you arrived at helping people live their best lives now.
Yes, so I grew up in the south of sunny Spain, and I was there from my childhood and moved back to the UK where I had been born previously. And I then went to school in England, and I went to university where I did French and German, and I had a year abroad in Germany, which was great. And then I qualified as a solicitor. I then became a Montessori nursery school teacher and entrepreneur, and then reinvented myself in business development. But in November 2019, I got breast cancer, which caused me to really reevaluate my life. And also made me really think about how someone as healthy as I really thought I was, and 45 at the time with no history of breast cancer in the family, I was really taken aback how this could just strike me just like that. And so I was extremely conscious of the fact that I felt really lucky to have lived the kind of life that I had lived. I've always been, and I see myself as action woman, taking action. So I do not procrastinate. I get on with it straight away. If I'm in a job I don't like, or if I'm somewhere that's not working out for me, I don't just sit there and moan. I take action and move on straight away. So because of that, I felt, having had this experience, it was very important for me. I feel a very real urgent fact to help others lead their best life now, because I feel that most people are just treading water or on the hamster wheel, not really paying attention to what their life looks like and all the things that they really want to do. And I don't actually believe that they have set any goals or any aspirations for themselves. They're almost, living into a default future. So my coaching nowadays is very much focused on helping people to realize what it is they want out of life and take action with support. So helping somebody who's stuck really move forward.
Wonderful. What an introduction. You know, and you've done, as you say, in the 40 plus years that you've been on this planet, you have packed quite a lot into that. So I just want to go right back to the beginning where you said you grew up in Spain, you moved back to the UK, you spent some time in Germany, and then, of course, you now live in beautiful Singapore as well. So your life then traversed the planet and you've made your home in Singapore. Travel is one of those things that has really shaped my life. So tell me about how you feel you have and what you have learned from moving around and traveling throughout your life to date.
I feel very lucky to have been a third culture kid. That's where you grew up, in a country where you yourself, your parents are not from that country. So my mother is Japanese and my late father was British. So I am mixed race, a Eurasian, as we're called. And growing up in the UK and in Spain, I never really fit in, you know, racially. Nobody can define me. And therefore, I always felt rather rootless. But that has always been an advantage, because wherever I have been, people have been fascinated and interested. Mm-hmm. And they've always say, you know, they always say, so, you know, where are you from? Or was you're very interesting. You look, you know, quite unusual. And what's your background? So I've enjoyed living in Germany. I spent a lot of time in France. We lived in Hong Kong for 3 years. And now we're coming up to our 7th year here in Singapore. But I think that being open to cultures and really seizing opportunities overseas has been what's really been one of the greatest things about the life that I lead. We have always just been super open to any opportunity that comes our way. And so I'm lucky that I married another Eurasian. So my husband is half Chinese, half English. Mm-hmm. And so he was very open to coming to Asia. He did a degree that involved studying Spanish. So he lived in Madrid. So we have, you know, a lot in common in terms of our appreciation of international culture.
That's a lovely union that you have together, and that shared experience. But if I just go back to the point you made about not fitting in, how did that strike you when you first came across it, Lara? And because we're talking about that whole can-do mindset, and it has to start somewhere in our lives, so how did you adapt to that not fitting in? And as much as you said people were interested and fascinated by you because of that mixed culture that was within you, was it something that you had to learn to deal with, and was it a challenge, or did you see that it was just something that was part of your life experience and you embraced it with both hands?
I think it's something to do with growing up. All children, when they're small, want to fit in. And that's always the case when you've got a group of children who are always very honest and will always point out the way in which. And that can be anything, whether you're wearing glasses or you've got long hair or short hair or a big nose or whatever it is, they will point to something that they notice. And it's always the most obvious thing. They're not terribly creative. And so in my case, it was quite obvious in, you know, Western Europe, the fact that I had very Japanese eyes. Mm-hmm. So they would look at me and say, China, Chinese in Spanish. So, mm-hmm. you know, and I would get annoyed because I wasn't Chinese. So I wasn't annoyed about the fact that they were pointing out that I was Oriental. I was annoyed by the fact that they were factually incorrect. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I definitely didn't like the fact that this was my, you know, my main point of interest, the fact that I was so-called Chinese when I absolutely wasn't. If they had said, oh, you half Japanese, I might have been like, yeah, I am. And so what? You know, but the fact that they were calling me Chinese, I was pretty annoyed about that, because I was not, you know, I'm like, no, what, I am not. Mm-hmm. And I was quite a serious child. I think definitely, you know, the lawyer in me started out very early. But I learned as I grew up that actually being different in certain ways can be a great advantage. And I'll never forget the time when I went up to Oxford for my entrance interview, and someone said to me, oh, well, don't worry, you'll get in, you know, they like a bit of colour in the photograph.
Oh,
and but interestingly, I didn't take that as a racist remark, even okay. though I can see that it would be. Mm. I took it in a good way, as in, oh, you know, great, I'll stand a pretty good chance of getting in then. You know, I looked at it in a positive way and thought, oh, that sounds good. Yeah, if they like a bit of colour in the photo, that's going to work in my favour. And it did. So, hey, I was colourful in the photograph, which is great.
Do you know, that's a perfect example of that can-do mindset. You just flipped it. And you saw the advantage. You didn't let it bother you. So you were already winning through that minor adversity that others might have just turned around. And even I responded and went, oh, but it was like, I love the fact that you came back and said, you know what, I didn't let it bother me. I just went with it. And as a result, the photograph had more colour in it. What a wonderful way to be. And it's that is the thrust and the whole focus of this whole podcast. And the reason why I love doing these interviews is to bring out these amazing stories of how people think and how they respond in the moment to say, I can do this, rather than I'm going to limit myself by getting caught up in the moment. So let's move forward then. And you said once you had trained as a solicitor, you then were a Montessori teacher, and then you reinvented yourself as an entrepreneur. And now I know you do a number of things. You are an accredited executive coach, you run your two podcasts. So throughout your lifetime, Lara, you have been taking risks. You've been presenting yourself with challenges, which is what risk entails. So tell me, when you face a risk, how do you manage it and what do you learn from it as a result?
So I think the first biggest risk I took was leaving the law. Lawyers are very risk averse, and it was a big deal. You know, I had taken 4 years at university, I had done 2 years at law school, I had done 2 years in a training contract, and then I had practiced for 4 years as a European competition law lawyer in a big city firm. Well, Dentons is probably the largest firm in the world now. But at the time, not many people were leaving law. You know, once you were in, you got very much trapped by the salary. You know, I was a very high earner compared to my peers. You get, you get paid pretty well as quite a young person. And so I think leaving at that particular time, everyone said, gosh, you're so brave. Can't believe you're leaving the law. But it was about the fact that I recognised that it really wasn't something I wanted to do. I was staying up till 3, 4 a.m. consistently. Mm-hmm. The kind of work that I did, which was merger clearance work, was very, very intense, deadline driven. And unfortunately, there's so many quite nasty characters involved at the particular time. Mm-hmm. And therefore, I just thought, this isn't for me, and this is my one life. So I've recognised that it isn't. I'm going to do something about it, and I'm going to go and try something else. I do think, however, that things would be very different if the law were like it is today. But in those days, and we are talking about 2004, mm-hmm. which is a very long time ago, in those days there weren't many choices. You certainly could not work flexibly. I did have a laptop, but I certainly was not allowed to work from home or have any support like that. And there weren't things such as coaches who can support mm-hmm. you and help you with your options and really talk through what you could do. And I think actually, if I had been a bit more creative, perhaps in my outlook, I might have gone into other areas of law that might have suited me better rather mm-hmm. than leaving. Mm-hmm. But at the time, I just really reached the end of my tether with it and thought I would do something else. So that was a big risk. I think reinventing myself as a business development professional in Hong Kong was also a risk, because at the time I was a mother of three. I had never worked full time as a mother before. So that was a risk. You know, how was I going to balance my work and my life at home? So that was sort of quite risky. But I'd say that the risk of leaving my most recent role to start my own consultancy was again a risk. But the more risks you take, and the more you see evidence for the fact that each time you take a risk and actually it works out, the braver you become. So it's almost like a snowball effect. I think if it's your first big risk, it feels bigger than it is. But if you've done this kind of thing before, like I have, so I've done it several times already, mm-hmm. it actually isn't a big deal, because you can always look at something and say, is this something that's a one-way street, or can I really turn around and go back? And I've always had a lot of faith that actually if it didn't work out, it's not a big deal. Just go back, you know, or I can always just go back and get another job. It's not a big deal. So I think you have to have a certain level of self-confidence to be able to take those risks.
I couldn't agree with you more. And I love the fact that you have taken the approach in your life to say it's okay to try lots of different things. You know, you and I both come from an era that there was that lifetime. As you said, you became a solicitor, you were in it for life because of the attraction of perhaps the salary and then going forward to become a partner in a firm or something like that. But it was engendered into us at that stage to get a job for life, whereas you and I both have taken a different approach and we have explored various options in our careers and we are now the coaches that we are today. But by taking those risks and by continually learning and as you said, you can go back, but it sounds to me that you take the approach to always keep moving forward.
Definitely. I'm all about moving forward. I cannot sit still. I cannot sit on the sofa and just watch Netflix. If I'm watching Netflix, I am also busy doing something else with my hands. Mm-hmm. So, yes.
There's that action woman coming out, isn't it? As you said, if it's something to be done, you will get on with it there and then in the moment. So that's fantastic. So when it comes to that intervention in your life, let's call it that, when breast cancer appeared in your life in 2019, this is a period of adversity that obviously will have knocked you in a variety of different ways. Tell me, Lara, when you think about adversity and the work that you now do with professionals and helping them to move forward in their lives, they have to face adversity to go through that too. How did you face that time in your life and really win through it by powering up your resilience?
I think the most important thing is one's attitude, and I've always been raised an optimist by my mother. And it's about knowing that it's up to you whether you're going to treat yourself as a victim or just see it as it is. So I felt obviously initially quite shocked and feel a victim of this terrible cancer. But at the same time, I thought, no, enough of that. You know, you can feel sorry for yourself. I did a lot of crying, why me, why me? But then I thought, actually, yes, it is me. So what can I do about this? How can I move on? And as I started with my cancer treatment, so I had chemotherapy literally the week after I had my diagnosis, straight in there. Mm-hmm. I thought, hey, I'm not going to waste my time here. I better do something about it. And so that's when I started my International Coaching Federation ACC accreditation. I did, a 6-month course online using Zoom, which was fantastic, joined a wonderful cohort of other coaches, did all my training, did 100 hours of coaching practice. I really dedicated myself and powered through that. And it helped me so much. So I would say anyone with facing an adverse situation, focus on something else. Set yourself a goal that distracts you, that obviously you just kind of need to power through with the treatment on a daily basis. But it's not really about looking, although I do focus on moving forward, I tried not to think about the future too much. I actually focused on every day as it came and distracting myself with doing something that kept my mind alive. I met so many new people and I entered a whole new world. You know, the coaching world just really gave me such a great new vitality and interest in so many other things. And that feeling that, my goodness, I had no idea this world existed and that I fell so naturally within it. I had no idea.
That's a beautiful story of, you know, the whole action woman just keeps jumping out at me, that even though you were facing something that is a critical junction in your life, and it obviously was uncomfortable for you in more ways than one. Chemo can't have been very nice. You were obviously tired. There were times, as you said, the tears flowed, but you were very present with yourself as well, managing and coping day to day, but focusing so much on what your future could look like, even though you were still very present in the moment. So I think that's it's such an admirable quality that you took forward. And I think listeners will really take something from that as well, to say, you know, whatever we face in life, there is always a way that we can empower ourselves to think differently, be better at what it is that we are doing or caught up in at the moment, to give us hope, to give us a way forward. Thank you very much for sharing that story. Moving forward then, we've talked about a lot of things. We've talked about risk, we've talked about adversity and building resilience, and you are a walking, talking, action woman who has mastered a lot of these things, and I'm sure you are continuing to learn to do so. So in amongst all of this, because you give so much of your time now in the role of a coach to others, what do you do to look after yourself then, Lara? What are your go-tos to switch off and step away from the noise?
I have to be quite self-disciplined about making time for exercise, mm-hmm. and self-care, because I'm really bad at doing exercise. So I put a exercise time in my calendar every day, so it pops up, and whether I do it or not, at least it's a reminder to make sure that I've thought about it, whether I put my shoes on and go out or not. But I think that I'm very good at having a lot of different hobbies and fun things that I like to do. So I'm a real fabric fanatic, and I sew a lot of things, and I run a little online shop as well on Etsy. Mm-hmm. And that's a real distraction and a great leisure and therapy for me in my sewing. Gives me a lot of joy to make some beautiful things that brighten up the everyday. And I make a lot of things that people have requested. So a lot of custom projects with names and messages and things like that. And that brings me great joy when somebody leaves me a review and says, you know, this was such a fantastic thing. I'm so happy with this. And wow, thanks for that. And oh, this quilt is amazing. And, you know, so I like to, yeah, spend my time doing fun things like that.
That's beautiful, you know, and you need to find whatever works for you. That's what it takes. You know, there's so many different ways that we can look after ourselves and we can prioritize our well-being, but it has to be something that, as you said, that beautiful word, it needs to bring you joy. So whether it's making something for somebody else or going for a 10-mile hike or swimming lengths or riding your bicycle or jumping out of an aircraft with a parachute on your back, it's something that you need to find and discover for yourself. That's so vitally important. But it sounds beautiful of the things that you are creating, and it's completely the opposite of what you do in your day-to-day life as well. So we come to the time in the interview, Lara, if you can share your three can-do tips with our listeners, please.
Yeah, so the number one thing is always keep an open mind and be open to new opportunities. I think many people don't listen to what's out there. So be really open, don't judge, and don't hold yourself back. So that kind of falls in with number two, which is let go of your ego. I think most people are held back by their pride. So for example, with the law thing, you know, to other people, it was quite a big deal to be a lawyer. For me, it's not a big deal at all. I feel like, oh, I've been there, I've done that, it's fine, I don't need to be a lawyer anymore. But I think many people get trapped by being a lawyer. It's their identity or even a job title. I was head of business development for Asia Pacific, but I quite happily gave that up. It's not a big deal. You know, it doesn't define me. So let go. Do not listen to your ego. And third, always lead with generosity, because I'm such a big believer in the reciprocity, you know, the law of reciprocity, in terms of you give something first, it will come back to you in spades. It will come back twice, three times more powerfully than what you gave, and not necessarily from the person that you gave to. So, you know, never think about, oh, I'm going to give them this, they have to give me that. It's like, no, just always be generous, and with your time, with your skills, with your listening ear, with your kind words, your support, and just always think of how you can help some other people. Because if you can get joy in that way from just the fact that you can help, then your life will be so much better.
Beautiful. And that third one, and you used my favorite word in the whole world, which is reciprocity. So I love all three of those: always keeping an open mind, letting go of your ego, and always leading with generosity. Again, those three points, with all of the can-do points I've collected over the years I've been doing this, is a wonderful host of ways for listeners to think about perhaps doing things differently and having their own realizations to develop more strength in their can-do attitude to life. So my final question for you, Lara, is why do you feel a can-do attitude is absolutely essential?
I think everything in life is about attitude. So if you have a can-do attitude, if you believe that you can do it, that you can learn, you might not have the skills right now, you might not be able to do something right now, but if you believe you can, and you say, well, actually, I don't know how to do that, but I can learn, and I'm prepared and willing, and I want to do it, that is what everybody needs. So it's all about that attitude, especially when it comes to jobs and when it comes to being an entrepreneur. If you sit there and say, oh, I can't do this, I can't do that, you will really not get anywhere. But let's say you apply for a job and you're there with a great attitude. I don't think you can really teach attitude in the way that you can teach skills. You can always learn skills. They're not a big deal. But attitude, where you're there with a positive outlook and you're happy to roll up your sleeves and no job is too small and you're not too proud to do what it takes, that will take you far.
Wonderful summary. Thank you so much. And I just wanted to say I've really enjoyed hearing your story, Lara. I know we've known each other for only a short time, and I've heard different versions of your stories over that time as well, and we've worked together as well. And I just loved hearing your interpretation of what it has taken in your life to really develop a strong can-do mindset. And I know your message of, with your strapline of being the action woman, she takes action, she gets things done, is something that will really resonate with my listeners. So thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thanks very much, Gail. I've really enjoyed it.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. Do you live and breathe a can-do attitude? Have an inspiring perspective, a life-changing experience, or intriguing story to share? Always curious and with an insatiable appetite for a good yarn, I invite you to be my guest. Do get in touch via my website, gailmgibson.com. The Can Do Way podcast, refreshing, positive, and real.